O-line room's hottest room in the whole entire building.
Disgusting.
Just big fellas in there just oozing, you know? Oozing. When you're a big fella, like, your feet don't fit on the stairs.
How big is your foot?
I'm a 17. So you can't, like, not much. Listen.
Today we have an unbelievably legendary guest, Andrew Whitworth.
We are talking Super Bowl 56, the Rams versus the Bengals, with the man who played on both teams.
You know, it's a pretty good week for me.
Andrew Whitworth.
Walter Payton Man of the Year on Thursday.
Check.
Super Bowl championship on Sunday.
Check.
And a walk-off right after the game with the kids, like, hey, we're done.
That's it. No more.
What a way to end it. This was the Rock Super Bowl.
The Super Bowls come back to Los Angeles.
Can you get off the field so we can kick the football off? I mean, what's going on right now? Hey, I'm trying to win a Super Bowl, Rock. I'm glad you're in the middle of the field, but can we kick it, please? It really started from, unfortunately, you. You took the Super Bowl from me the first time, you jerk. After the game, look up, see my wife. My son Michael sitting in her lap. I flex both my arms up at him, kind of look up at him, and he like,
yeah.
You did that, by the way. Just want you to know that.
I'm sorry, all right. Buddy.
All right.
I'm sorry.
But I'm not.
Games with Names is presented by Wynn Las Vegas and Encore Boston Harbor and is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to Games with Names. On today's episode, we are talking Super Bowl 56, the Rams versus the Bengals, with the man who played on both teams, Andrew Whitworth. Future Hall of Famer, 16-year NFL vet, absolute beast. Looks like a football player when you see him in person.
Sure does.
Just yeah. A stout man. Stout man. And, of course, a Super Bowl champion, and we will be talking about his Super Bowl championship, what it was like to get on the top.
Going out, riding off into the sunset, doing it right.
Learning and playing, and I would say almost co-coaching with Sean McVay.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Brain trust.
That's where I met him, where we met. Did we get into that?
Soho House, right?
A little bit, yeah. Hey, spoilers. Yeah, there's some talk.
And also the secret to his longevity.
Long career.
Thursday Night Football stuff, too.
And we get into the Thursday Night Football. We get into why Chris likes us more than that crew over on Fox. And then we wrap it up with hitting the old hotline.
And this episode is recorded from Wynn Las Vegas.
Make sure to check out Games with Names on YouTube, Instagram, X, Snapchat, and TikTok. At Games with Names. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Comment a game you want us to do, and remember to rate and review. Call in at 424-291-2290. Leave a message for some game recs. Give us some war stories, some of the iconic games you want us to do, or whatever. Just give us a call in. It's been awesome having you guys call. Games with Names is brought to you by Wynn Las Vegas and Encore Boston Harbor. Wynn Las Vegas and Encore Boston Harbor are the ultimate destinations for sports lovers. Enjoy the sports book, play golf, eat at a great restaurant, and stay in luxury accommodations. Sign up for Wynn Rewards and redeem for resort credit. Let's go.
February 13, 2022, SoFi Stadium, Inglewood, California.
The Rams are trailing the Bengals 20-16 late in the fourth quarter.
With the ball on the 1 yard line, Stafford drops back. He looks for Cooper Kupp. This is Super Bowl 56.
Hell yeah. Welcome to Games with Names. Today we have an unbelievably tall, handsome, legendary guest, Andrew Whitworth. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, man. I'm happy to be here, brother.
This is Kyler. This is Jack. And today we are going to be looking at and talking about Super Bowl 56, the Rams versus the Bengals. Why'd you pick this game?
You know, it's a pretty special game, to say the least, Jules. You know, it's a pretty good day, pretty good week for me.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, Walter Payton Man of the Year on Thursday.
Check.
Super Bowl championship on Sunday.
Check.
And a walk-off right after the game with the kids. Like, hey, we're done. This has been cool. We're out of here.
Mate,
Yeah.
Off check, into the checkmate. Sunset, baby.
That's it.
What a way to end it.
Yeah, dude. You know, really special. I mean, I think of it when I picked this game, really, though, to me, it's, you know, you know this. When you play for a long time, every year when you get to that end of the season, it's tough on you physically, mentally, everything. And when it doesn't end the right way, it's even worse. And then you got to convince yourself you can go back through it again. And it really started from, unfortunately, you jerk. You took the Super Bowl from me the first time in 53, I guess that was. Yeah.
Is it 53? Yeah,
53. You know, and that's where it started. People thought I was going to retire after that one.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel that way, but going into the game, you know how that is. Every question I got asked was, you're going to retire after this? And it was like, no, I feel like I'm going to keep playing, but I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But naturally, I was 38, so I get it, right? You know, my beard was almost all white, not as much as it was now. But I lost that game, obviously, and I can remember after the game, I came over there and found you. You were about to get ready to celebrate. The confetti's falling. Said, what's up? Congratulate you. And then I take off to leave the field, dude. And I knew where my family was sitting. I look up, see my wife, and my son Michael's sitting in her lap. And he's my footballer. I got four kids, you know, 12, 12, 11, and 9 now. Chaos. But he's sitting in her lap. He's bawling, crying. And he's my footballer. And I look up at him, and I'm like, man, just as a dad, you're like, shoot. Now, like, you know, it's like I'm pissed, but I know I'm going to still play football. Like, I know I'm not done. And I'm like, how am I going to get this dude to, like, get these tears out? So any little kid, right, like, a boy especially, like, flex your muscles at me, buddy. So I flex both my arms up at him, kind of look up at him and smile. I'm like, put a smile on your face. Like, you know, I'm mouthing it at him. And he, like, best smile he could get, right? Like, 7, 8 years old, just devastated.
Yeah.
And you did that, by the way. Just want you to know that.
I'm sorry, but I'm
it's
not.
It's okay. Michael, Uncle Jules is sorry.
I'm sorry, all right, buddy.
All right.
I'm sorry.
But I'm not.
You guys are good. You got one next year. You can't, you know, you're good.
But, you know, it was cool because after that game, we had to have a conversation. And, you know, it was about, you know, things you get out to is opportunities to teach your kids. Like, man, look, Mike, like, we're going to keep moving forward. We'll keep chasing. And, you know, to go through the next couple years, struggle a little bit, blow out my PCL and MCL in 2020, decide to still come back at 40 and play football. And to get the opportunity to go play against the team I played for 11 years in the Super Bowl. That's why I picked the game, because it was an ending of your time in the league, adversity you'd been through, always choosing to come back and say, I'm going to chase this thing one more time. And when that final snap happened, the first thing I did, I went over and saw Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow, gave them a little love, and I turned to find my family. And the greatest reward you can ever have, my son Michael standing at the front of the suite, both arms up, just all smile, flexing.
Ear to ear.
Dude. So to me, it's like that Super Bowl is awesome, but like we know this in sports, man. Anytime you get a chance to kind of back up your own words and prove what you're about, and especially to your own kid, it's just a moment. It makes me emotional every time I think about it,
yeah.
You know? And so it's just cool, man. It's a really special game for the Super Bowl, but also for that opportunity as a father to show him what I was about.
Yeah.
He knows that now.
People don't realize everyone just thinks you get to the top and you go and win a Super Bowl, but the failures,
oh man,
the adversity, that's the real scar tissue that's built, that calcifies you. And that's what makes you go on to be able to succeed. And, you know, I remember when we lost our Super Bowl in 2011 in Indianapolis against the Giants. Had that same, I mean, I was still a younger player, so yeah. We were in different completely situations. I barely played. I was like a special teamer still. But getting to the top and getting to the last game and losing that game is almost the absolute worst thing you can possibly feel, because you were so close. You were right there. And all offseason, you think about the one or two plays you could have done. What if what ifs? Yep. What if I would have just caught five more balls at, you know, yep, practice that week? What if I, you know, this happened? And to be able to go out and freaking actually go out and get it done after losing, I mean, that's big leagues. That's big leagues, man. Congrats. That's awesome, man. I appreciate you coming on. Is this the greatest game of all time?
I mean, that game?
Yeah.
No chance.
No chance?
No chance.
At least we got a man with integrity here,
guys.
Right.
That's right.
At least we got a man with integrity.
I mean, for me personally, yes.
Yeah,
in general, no. No chance. But, I mean, it was. I mean, you think about it. Like, for me, it was a movie script.
Yeah.
I mean, you play for one team for 11 years.
Dude.
They tell you you're too old, basically. Like, they don't want to commit to you playing there anymore. And you end up with another team who hasn't had a winning record in 15 years. And you end up in two Super Bowls, losing one and winning one, and finishing against that team that told you that in the Cincinnati Bengals. It was unbelievable for me.
Against a bunch of LSU boys, too,
yeah,
over there.
Yeah, come on. I had to let them know, like, it's still Papa LSU, right? It's not the young guy's time yet, all right? It's still my time, you know what I mean? So that was fun. You know, it's great. I think Joe, like, you know, we have a good relationship. Obviously, the year I tore my PCL MCL is when he tore his ACL, so – we both went to Dr. Elatrosh and got some time to be together. But, you know, so we have a good relationship. But I think he's still kind of like, you know, like a little like, you know, kind of a little, he's mad at me still. It's okay. But it is what it is. It's just like I was mad at you for a while, you know?
Hey, there can only be one winner. There can only be one
I'll
winner.
I'll move on. Don't worry.
You know, there's only one happy team at the end of every
there's
year.
No doubt
there's only
it,
one happy team. Can you walk downstairs with that PCL now or what? It's still
Yeah, I'm good. I'm great.
That was always the thing with the PCL, walking down. I tore my PCL in 07. And that's ultimately what led to me to retire, because over the years, my knee started sagging back. You know how it is.
Yeah.
And then I wore out the medial part of my
side. Well, you know, the ogre I am, that I have a lot of other issues walking down the stairs, and it's that my feet don't fit on stairs. So a lot of people don't realize this. When you're a big fella, like, your feet don't fit on the stairs. So I can't walk. I have to walk my feet sideways.
How big is your foot?
I'm a 17. So
you, know
you
what that
can't,
means?
Like... Hey, not much.
Big
listen,
socks.
Again, I'll have to. If you guys on Thursday can come to Thursday Night Football and check out Big Wit Little Mike, it's a segment I do. Anyways,
no. Speaking of that, man, you do killer work. You're working on Amazon right now, which has been it's been awesome for the league. The whole streaming, and I think, you know, watching you guys. You know, I'm working at Fox, watching you guys. You guys are so good together. We share a teammate, Carissa Thompson. How has it been working on Amazon now that you're you know, you retire and you get into TV, you're freaking killing it. You have so many great insights and thoughts and how you speak on TV. How you liking it?
It's been a blast. I mean, I think that it's one of those things I love to share, getting a chance to do it. When I got in the NFL in 2006, you know, I had the honor of playing in three different decades of the league. I played long enough that it's really unique. Like, when you're in an offensive line room, you walked in, and I don't think a lot of people realize this as a draft, like, as an offensive lineman, you walked in, the first talk you'd have is like, your O-line coach is going up there and be like, none of you guys get to talk to the media. You don't say a word. You don't speak about this room. You don't talk about our offense. Like, if you're in an article, like, you know, you better have been forced to comment, basically. And so you were kind of told, avoid all of that. So the first half of my career, I'll never forget when Taylor Lewan gets drafted. And I think this is so great, and I tell him this all the time. He goes his rookie year. He goes and works the combine the next year after his rookie year. And I remember just being like, old linemen around the league are texting me just like, man, who is this punk like that thinks he's allowed to talk? Like, you can't talk about football. Like, you're an old lineman. You're telling too much, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was the nature of, like, our, you know, guy. It really took a long time for a lot of veteran guys to be okay with old linemen who, like, spoke to the media.
Yeah.
And that was really what it was like. And so I came up kind of with that mentality. And then you start to kind of like, all right, it's cool. Like, that's fine. Like, we're just talking about a game that we play
and
we love, and it's not that serious. And so I think you really think of it, a lot of those things have changed. And now to have this opportunity as an offensive lineman to be on a primetime, you know, an analyst desk and get to talk about a game that I love, that's meant so much to me, is always say, like, I can't wait to celebrate guys in this game.
Yeah.
And so getting a chance to do this, like, this changed my life, my kids' life. It's given me the opportunity to change other people's lives. So just that honor to me is what I think about every time I get to do it. It's like, celebrate a game that I think is, you know, we talked about the greatest game of all time, the greatest sport of all time, the greatest competition of team, and the ability to go out and make something bigger than yourself. Like, man, to celebrate that and what this whole entire thing is, like, it's really special to be a part of it. And that's really what's on my mind every time I get on a desk and get a chance to talk about this game.
100%. And, you know, that you talk about how linemen don't talk. Like, people don't realize. The Hogs, you guys are the motherfuckers that get the wins. If the Hogs don't work together, the team ain't doing shit. And they're the most selfless people. I always connected with the linemen because I was a former quarterback. So I'd hang out with Logan Mankins. Yep. I'd hang out with Wendell, and we were roommates. So that they're a special group of guys that are selfless. They all hang out in one area of the locker room. They don't want any attention. They always talk about their goddamn wives and their families. They're the biggest family men in the world.
Stuff in their faces.
They're protectors. You know,
food all over the side of their mouth. They're sweating at all times. You go in there, there's sweat all over them sitting in the facility watching
always
tape. O-line room's hottest room in the whole entire building.
Disgusting.
Just big fellas in there just oozing, you know? Oozing. I mean, that's the O-line room, right? And it's a brotherhood. And it's special. You think of this game, it really is. I mean, that line on both sides of the football is so unique and has a lot to do with teams that win every week. And I think that's really the biggest honor, being a lineman. And then also thinking about how unique the position is. I always say this, like, think of how many positions in the world play with their back to the ball at all times in a game, right? I think they're really, it's the only position I know of.
Yeah.
Literally, you are always playing with your back to the ball.
Shields.
And so it's wild to think that it's a unique thing. And you look at it in this league right now, it's a huge topic of improving that play. And I think that's one of the things is that it is a challenging thing because it's not really something you would just normally think of when you think of athletics, of having your back to the ball and not really knowing where the action is. And we've continued to eliminate their time to prepare. And I think that's one of the biggest struggles there is in the league right now.
That's one thing I've been talking about. You know, one of the biggest themes of the year we were talking about with every goddamn team, offensive line. And I think it's a product of what the new CBA allows us to do in the offseason. There's less padded practices. And those big boys, that's where they get their reps. And they need to – it's like choreography with these guys. You know, they got to be able to pass guys off at – but it has to be a live rep. You can't simulate that. You know, so it's been crazy to watch how they're going to adjust the O-line room and how they're going to – because there's always something. They'll figure it out. But getting back to you on TV, I think you've done an awesome job of giving the viewer a perspective of what the lineman sees. Because what people don't realize, linemen are like the smartest guys on the team. Like a lot of the times. The Joe Tooneys reading books, that. Yeah. They have to be able to defend the most athletic guys on the fucking field, these D linemen that are absolutely monsters. And they got to do it together. And there's so much feel. And they got to look at the lines and... You know, you got the center who's calling out bear front, and everyone's got a signal and they're communicating. It's been so cool to watch you on TV break that down for the viewer because we haven't really, like you said, had that.
Yep.
There hasn't been many O linemen out there that have done that. How great is Carissa?
Dude, unbelievable.
She's a good point guard.
Dude.
That's what people don't realize. She's the point guard, always dishing.
She is. And she can hoop.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, she can actually hoop for real. Like, you know, we've gotten a chance to spend a lot of time together. Obviously, when you're a road team, you know, you guys are kind of a home team, right? Y'all are in the studio. But when you're a road team, you get to see everybody's messiness, right? Like how you travel, how you kind of live together, you know, all the ups and downs of just life, right? Because you're spending 48 hours or more every week together. And so we get a chance to bond a lot, man. She's so special. I know how much she loves working with you guys. And
well, she did say she liked our crew better.
You know, so there you go. You know, so I think she tells everybody that. I think Carissa's wise enough and witty enough to tell us what we want to hear in the moment. So I think she's told both crews that she likes them better, would be my guess. But she's the best, man. Honestly, like it's been really cool to have somebody like that because you got to think on our desk, like we started year one. Not only is this streaming new and this whole entire platform new, but Ryan Fitzpatrick, myself, and Richard Sherman are coming straight off the field.
Yeah.
Like, never have done this before. And she's sitting up there with a desk and Tony Gonzalez is her only hope. Like, hey, I hope we can keep these guys together because they've never done this. And I'll never forget our first like show. One of the producers is like, hey guys, if we have some dead time right here, y'all just banter. And we're like, you know, it's break. And somebody's like, hey, what's banter mean?
Yeah.
It's like, what does that mean? Like, and she's like putting her hand like, oh my God, it just means just talk. We're like, oh, cool. All right. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. All right. But it's like, we have no idea what's going on. Right.
And no one teaches you. That's what people.
No, that's like nothing. Like, hey, say, cameras
go be
on.
Yourselves guys.
Yeah. Good luck.
I remember that was the first thing when I started
swim.
Doing.
Yeah. That's what they say.
The first I go on inside the NFL, I get out of TV for the first time. I'm nervous as hell. Once that camera, when that red light's on, you can't fool nobody.
Nope.
You know what I mean? And I was just sitting there so nervous. like, yo, what do you got? He goes, hey, just be you, man. Just be you. I'm like, all right, thanks.
Yeah, appreciate it.
There's no playbook.
Like I said, it's throw them in there. Swim. You know, and it is. But she's been awesome. And I think just her leadership, man, you can feel it every week. Like, she has a plan. And she really, like, I thought the first year was awesome. She would meet some of us down for coffee every time before we'd, like, leave the hotel just to kind of, hey, is there any way I can support you? Any way I can set you up better today? Is there any way that you'd really like to get in and out of things we talk about in a different way? Like, it meant a lot to her. So having her with us has been, man, I don't know if you could put a price tag or a value on what she's meant to all of us.
I mean, did she give you a journal?
Oh, yeah. I got a journal.
Damn, I thought I was special.
No, you're not that special.
Fuck. She gives great gifts.
Yeah, she does.
She's thoughtful gifts afterwards.
Yeah, she's one-ups you.
It's good to have a girl on the set with a bunch of fucking animals.
Just meatheads.
Tighten us up.
There's no doubt.
How'd you prepare to face this elite D defensive line or a defensive end? What do you look at when you were watching film when you were playing? Are you looking at scheme? Are you looking at individuals? Break us down with that, how your prep process
I think it's,
was.
You know, I think it's interesting because now doing this, I get a chance to have such a broader lens of, like, things I'm looking at. But when I played, you know, obviously my job, you know, I spent more of the week probably at my back half of my career on, you know, just the attitude, the mentality, the focus of the week of the young guys, making sure they understood what was going on in my room and a lot of other rooms. And even, you know, somewhat in my career towards the end, I was older than every coach on the staff. So it was like, you know, also mentoring those guys and kind of just being around, hey, here's something I think we could do a little better or have more emphasis on and that kind of stuff. So, but when it came to tape, really, as a young player, it was really about studying habitual movements.
Yeah.
I mean, so for me, I was a big, you know, I grew up playing basketball. I didn't play football really until high school. And so I was always thinking of myself as I'm a power forward and somebody's trying to go dunk a basketball. And how do I keep my body in front of them? How would I prepare for the things they like to do? So I looked at pass rushers, whether it be a James Harrison or a Terrell Suggs or a Dwight Freeney early in my career. As it went on, the Von Millers and Khalil Macks, and then now the Nick Bosas and Myles Garrett. I'm studying the pattern of how they really move. And I want to learn their steps and how their body moves and on what step they like to come off with certain moves. And
what's their go-to move?
Oh, man. And how their hips and knees and, like, what are little tells? Like, is their hand really high on a spin? Does their inside lift? Does their outside go down? You know, do they carry their hands really low before they bull? Do they keep their hands high when they're going to hand swat? Like, I'm studying all those movements to where my mentality was, is it's, you know, you see at the combine, they do this, like, drill where you, like, shadow a guy, like, kick your feet and try to keep up with them. My mentality was, I should be making that step before you ever make it, because I should know what you're going to do before you do it. And so I would go out, and I remember Jared Goff when I first got to the Rams, like, being a young QB, like, you know, Jerry, if you know Jared, like, just kind of nuts sometimes. He's like, just kind of sitting over like, hey, what are you doing, man? You know, and I would be out there, like, repping Chandler Jones's moves. And he's like, why are you doing Chandler Jones' moves? And I'm like, if I can do them and kind of have a feel for him, then, like, while he's rushing me, I kind of, in my body, even though you don't see me on tape doing that, I'm kind of going through the motions of how he's moving while I'm taking my set, to where I kind of know exactly when, like, he's going to hit me.
Yeah.
You know, or, he's going to pull away. And so I pull away. Like, so it's like I'm kind of studying and learning their moves and trying to move when they move.
And that's what
it's a dance, baby.
It's a dance. You know, it's very similar for a receiver when he's preparing against a defensive, you know, a DB. You know, is his feet stagger when he's going to give you an offhand jam? Yeah. It's all those little things that you sit and you watch, so you subconsciously digest it, and it allows you to react when you're playing.
Yeah, I think Coop always told me this. Like, it made me think of, like, him being the rusher, like, you know, kind of being able to, like, what foot is it that little hezzy, you know, it's like. Yeah. It's not always off of two. It's not always off of three. Like, sometimes it's one more, and then it's the same move, to where in their minds they click, oh, it's this route, and then I actually do it off of this step, you know, that type of stuff. And they always thought of, like, man, that's the guys that could get me or were different. Like, I've talked to a lot of veteran tackles, Trent Williams, all those guys. We always joke, like, when the guy comes off the bench that we don't know, that's like a nightmare. Because
yeah.
I would rather face Nick Bosa every play than, like, wait, who's this guy? Like, who is this kid? Like, is he fast? Is he slow? Is he powerful? Like, those are the guys that actually made you nervous, because I don't know his exact pattern. And that would scare me more than, like, a guy that at least I know what I'm going to get.
Yeah, that's right there, folks. That's offensive line. 600 right there.
Yeah, that's not 200. No, 300. That's That's class level. That's way up there. 500-600 class level right there.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, well, you know, like you go to did you go to school?
He didn't go to class in college.
I went to Kent State.
Not have gone to school. So 100, 200, 300, that's like your basic level classes. Oh. This is like class level 500-600, baby.
Can't read, can't write, can't stay, okay. Baby.
It's advanced. Yeah, you're good.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table because geek culture is pop culture. And we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To add on that, how do you think, like, if you like put yourself across the line of scrimmage, how do you think defensive ends are looking at your tape? Like, what things are they cueing in on you, or how do they think they prepare against someone like
Honestly,
you?
Honestly, I think most of them just know that you're number 77. But no, but there's a couple guys that probably study more than that. I mean, AD is literally like, that's 73, you know, and I'm going to annihilate this guy. But I think, like, probably when you're talking about the really elite guys, they're thinking of how they could maybe adjust things a little bit. But the nature of what they do, and I you know, I've gotten a chance in the last 2 years to work with young rushers and stuff like that. Like last year, you know, it was publicized a lot that Mike and I worked together for a week, and it's those guys, you got to remember, they have to get to the quarterback. And this is the other thing I teach young linemen that want to know. I'm like, you do realize it's their job to get to the quarterback, not my job. So as long as we can dance and you want to dance, fantastic. Show me a guy that's got a ton of moves. That's awesome, because I am going to just keep giving you nothing and you're going to keep doing moves and the ball's going to be gone. And then you're going to tell me about how cool your move was. And I'm going to be like, great. I get paid so that you don't hit that guy. Other than that, like, great. You can have a lot of awesome moves and you can be like, oh man, I kind of got you at the end. Cool. So that's my thing, is those guys that they have limited time to get there. So they kind of have their way, they rush. And so when you're talking to those guys, to me, I always tell them, like, don't waste time, like, attack, be violent, get to the quarterback. And then you got to just trust the moves you have. As a tackle though, on the other side of it, it's be patient, be calm, be under control, and really just be ready for the moment they actually attack. So it's two-sided, really. If you want to be really good at it, it's the two things. Like, for the one side, it's patience and stability and balance. And on the other side, it's attacking at all times with a relentless effort and really a violent mentality to get to the quarterback. And so it's really, to me, that's the difference of the two positions, is that they can watch tape, but it's more just for them do you punch a lot or do you not punch a lot? Like me, I never stuck my arms out. I mean, I looked at it like in basketball. Again, I go back to this, like if I'm reaching, I'm dead, right? You reach, your feet stop, you're dead.
It gives them leverage.
So I'm never reaching, right? So the only time I'd ever reach is a guy who I knew was really terrible at speed. If he had no speed, now I'll grab you. Because I know that, like, even if you got my hands, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know this has turned into O-line 101.
This is what we...
People love this.
Love craft. Yeah, we love the game. Let's go deep in this stuff.
And it's just crazy because watching... It's like watching a young receiver getting off the line of scrimmage. Like you were saying, these guys, got all these moves and stuff. It's the guys that don't cover the ground. They think they're being cute and stuff. It's the guys that actually come and react off of your movement that are probably the tougher guys. You grew up in Louisiana, went to LSU. Did you grow up a Saints fan?
I did not.
Who'd you like?
North Louisiana. More North Louisiana. Where I grew up, they were the Aints.
Aints?
You were wearing paper bags, you know, to the games, I think. I was a Cowboys fan. So I'm actually closer to where I lived. You're closer to Dallas than you are New Orleans. So I grew up a Cowboys fan, always a Cowboys fan, you know. That was kind of my, it was Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, those guys, Charles Haley back in the day. I mean, you name it. I grew up that. And then also, they asked me this question the other night at Honors, like who my favorite, you know, growing up. I was really torn because I'm also a Niners Joe Montana fan because Sega, Joe Montana football, like that was my, put my gloves on. I put my receiver gloves on. I'd sit in front of the TV and like, I'm going after it, right? Full gear, like wristbands on. Joe Montana football, I'm going, you know.
I haven't heard that game in so long. I remember he had his little helmet out, like the propped up on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
That
so,
was a great. I was a Niners fan. I hated the Cowboys. Hated the Cowboys. My dogs were named Dwight and Montana. And we stopped becoming Niners fans once we got rid of Joe Montana. My dad loved Joe Montana. Yeah. And like when he went to the Chiefs, we were basically Chiefs fans for 2 years.
I love that.
You know, it was crazy. He was such larger than life, that guy. He was like God. You like Montana.
I was. I like Montana and Aikman were my guys. And, you know, it might have been because at that era we didn't even realize it, but that's really all you watched on TV were the Cowboys and the Niners and, you know, those kind of games. So that, and then, you know, obviously I really wasn't one of those guys that, like, was a huge pro sports guy when I was growing up.
See,
like,
it's the South probably.
You know, in North Louisiana, like there's no pro team. So I didn't really pay attention to it at all. Like I was a college guy, like obviously being basketball, it was Duke basketball. I had sideburns when I was young, when I first could get them, Cherokee Parks, baby. You know, that was my Christian Leitner, Grand Hill. That was my squad. So that was it, you know, and then I went on to college and, you know, I played. We actually have a little bit of a connection because Nick and
Saban,
Bill,
baby.
Nick and Bill, baby. I mean,
well,
you
Nick
know,
Saban went to Kent State as well.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, when I was with LSU, Bill would come down and like watch our off seasons and stuff like that and spend a lot of time with Nick, obviously, because of their relationship.
Yeah.
So we both kind of been ingrained very similar things. That's for sure.
Yeah. What was the plan for Nick Saban? Was he?
Well, you know, I got young Nick, so he was, you know, I think the best thing I could say is my very first time I was a freshman, we had a game, we had Monday morning, early morning film, 5 minutes late, maybe 3 minutes late, I don't know, I was really late getting across campus, and he would wait at the door to close it when the time would end, and he took those glasses off like he always does, and he lit me up. Into a way like I was just like in tears the rest of the meeting, and I'll never forget it. And my wife to this day is so tired of me because I am 45 minutes early to everything. Like I'm fully dressed before I got to be anywhere ready to go. So it was special because you realize really, you know, I think Kyle Williams and I always say this, he used to play in Buffalo forever. You know, we were high school rivals, college roommates, absolute stud. And we would say this, when you played for him there, you always felt like as players, we have to go out and lose the game. Because from a preparation standpoint and, you know, what we're ready to do in this game from practicing, knowing what they do, all of that, like he's put you in a situation to win. And you have to go play bad to lose. And you really did feel that way every time you lost. You're like, gosh, we let Nick down because we couldn't have had a better playbook to win the game.
Yeah.
That's what you felt like.
That's something I felt like I felt my whole career. There wasn't a game that we went into where you didn't feel like you should have won just because of the prep that you went through. Like constantly going over situations that come up maybe once a year, always being prepared for that one thing, knowing your opponent, putting the work in. Like,
and I think too, like, you know this with them, like, I always was blown away. Like, I feel like there's lots of coaches that work hard. And I'm not saying that, you know, they put in time, effort, all these things. But the intensity level and the focus level of, like, every detail always locked in, never relaxed, like, never, ever letting off the gas a little bit. I was always blown away in 4 years of being with Nick. Like, I never saw him ever pull off the gas at all. Yeah. It was always full intensity, fully locked into every detail that mattered of every situation and every week. I've just, even to this day, you know, I told Sean McVay this when I came in 2017, I got to spend like a month or two with him, the first, you know, couple months there in signing and getting to know each other. I was like, dude, you are one of the closest I've ever seen, because I've never seen it since I played for Nick. And I'd imagined, just seeing Bill when he would come visit, that he was that way. Like, I just never seen people that, not about working hard, but just that locked in all the time. It was really rare.
You know what it is? It's those guys, they enjoy the grind of preparation. Some guys, it's a task. It's like a chore. It's like, all right, we're gonna. Those guys, I tell the story all the time. And like, when I was like a second year player in the league, I loved just being in the locker room. I was still just amazed at being a Patriot.
Yep.
March, be doing cold plunge. Hot plunge. I'd be going back and forth 10 o'clock at night. You know, I went to Kent State, so we used to have to pay for our Gatorade shakes. Oh, yeah, I was just so infatuated with having everything for free, you know? And so I used to hang out there, and I would go in the weight room 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock.
Were you
loading
the backpack with Gatorades?
Huh?
Were you just stuffing Gatorades in the backpack?
100%. I was a rookie contract seventh rounder, Bubs. Come on, buddy. You should have saw my fridge at home. I had everything that they had at the facility. You go there at 11 o'clock at night in March, and you see Bill Belichick in the corner of the weight room on a treadmill with a freaking sweat vest on, with a big-ass book going over the draft with film on. 11 o'clock in March, just guys that enjoy the preparation process. And they, like, it was like that every year. Like, and they already had 3 Super Bowls at that time, you know, when I got there. And then when we won a Super Bowl, it's like they work even harder because they know you become the target. You become America's most wanted. Yeah,
people talk about process versus results and all this type of stuff. They are the process.
They are the process.
That is their result. Like, to them, win or losses actually don't matter. They are in the process all the time. So naturally the wins come and the results come because they never leave the process. They are at all times gathering information. Like, I always felt like, even when I'm talking to Nick, I'm like, is he evaluating what I'm saying? Or it's like, I'm just trying to have a casual conversation with you, but I feel like you're like evaluating what mood or mentality I'm in this moment. I'm just trying to ask you how your day's going.
Yeah.
You know, but like, they're that locked in all the time.
They're computers,
dude.
You know, and it's crazy. What, so LSU, play for Cincinnati, come over to the LA Rams, young hot shot, new coach, Sean McVay. Played him in college, went to Miami of Ohio.
Oh, that's cool.
What was the culture like? You explained a little, but let's jump into that detail of what that culture was like coming from Cincinnati, getting ready to become a Super Bowl team. What was that culture like?
It was unique because I'd been 11 years in Cincy, you know, Coach Marvin Lewis the whole time. Yep. You know, obviously my first couple of years in Cincinnati were rough. That was during the period of time when, you know, shoot, I think we had, you know, I don't know, over 10 guys, you know, that had arrest and different things going on my first 2 years in the league. It was crazy. I mean, it was
Bengal
chaos, right?
We used to have a formation called Bengal formation. It was a group. There's 4 sets of formations.
You're breaking the rules or jailbreak or something?
No. What was it? The F would move in each one of these things, in one of these formations. So on, you know, Brown, he was all the way out. On Tiger, the F would be in the here. And then on Bengal, all the way in, we remembered it. Bengals are always in jail. They're always...
There you go. See, I knew it was something like that. I knew that's where we were going. But no, that's the truth. And so then, you know, you play there. We actually had a great run, you know, there when Andy Dalton and A.J. Green and those guys were... Shoot, we had 5 years. We're in the playoffs. We're winning multiple division championships and just can't figure out a way to win in the playoffs. And then you go and it's like, hey, you're 36 years old. You're a free agent. The team's kind of telling you can't play anymore. You feel like you can play a lot more. And here comes the Los Angeles Rams. They hire the youngest coach in history of the NFL, Sean McVay. I had randomly, you know how these things just happen, literally 3 years before that, Jay Gruden was trying to hire him to Cincinnati. And I met him at the combine. And so Sean and I had met then, kind of struck up a relationship. And so I'm no idiot. I mean, you know, I'm a free agent. I'm on the PA. And I'm like, hey, listen, the combine's coming up in February. Like, I'm going to the PA meetings. So at the PA meetings, you know, you see people at the combine and you're just saying hey to everyone, you know, that type of deal. So I ran into those guys. I ran into a bunch of different coaches. You know, obviously you're going to be a free agent and, you know, had conversation. It was like, cool. Like Sean just got this job. I know him. Like, I hope this works out where there's an opportunity there. And they were moving Greg Robinson from the left tackle spot. So there was an op and I signed there and you know, you join the youngest head coach and here you are. I'm, you know, 8 years older than this guy. And I'm the left tackle, the prized free agent at 36 years old with a white beard. And so it was crazy because no left tackle had ever in NFL history at 36 got like a premium free agency contract. Yeah. So it was a huge leap for the Los Angeles Rams to do something like that, that had never been done. And it was a lot, like, honestly, for me, like the first year it was a lot of pressure because it's like, I am 36. I have no idea if my body's going to hold up or not. But I got to be around and see him and it injected probably, I mean, it's probably the last 5 years of my career, the most energy, most enthusiasm and just affection of loving the game that I've ever had in my entire football career being around Sean McVay, because he's one of the rarest people I've ever had the opportunity to be around. From that focus level, but also the ability that who he is as a communicator and how you can articulate and bring juice every single week. Like when you walk out of his meetings, you not only walk out like prepared for the game, you walk out feeling like, man, you are King Kong. Like yeah. He has just this ability to make you feel the most positive, just infectious energy about your team and your group. And it was awesome. And to think a 30-year-old head coach, I'll tell you this, Jules, and you'll get this. He's a 30-year-old head coach. We're probably 2 weeks into OTAs, his first OTAs. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go check on coach. Like, I ain't been in there, like, after the work. You know, I go do my own deal, watch my own stuff. Kind of, I'm mentoring young guys. I'm getting to know this young team. They're like, man, who's this grandpa who's working with us? You know, and so I'm getting to know these guys. And I'm like, I'm going to go check on Sean. So I go knock on his office door. Hey, come in. Like, go in. It's 4:30 in the afternoon, you know, in late April. And you know, it's like he's like got something on the TV, like I can't see. I'm like, what's going on the screen? Like, what you doing in here? He turns his screen to me. He's watching our team meeting. He's like, I go back and watch every single time I speak to you guys because I want to break down how I communicate every single day the message and what it is that I meant to set out with an intent to make sure you guys walked out of the room and felt. And if I can't feel it, then I want to critique myself harder than I critique anybody else. And if I'm the hardest on myself and every day I'm delivering a message that's consistent with what I want from you guys, then like, that's the best way for me to be a really good communicator. And I was like, wow.
Wow.
And not only that, we spent the first month talking about culture, communication, like what verbal and visual communication looks like. And it's like, you're sitting in there and I'm like, wow, there's a 30-year-old head coach. We aren't talking about X's and O's every day. We are talking about how you be like a grown man in football. Like, don't pout when you have a bad play. Like, show some juice, bring some energy back to the huddle and say, let's go be better the next snap. Like, things where you're like, wow, this is like intangible stuff that actually matters.
It's glue.
Right? And it's the glue. And it was really cool to see a young guy have really, I mean, the balls to do that. Because most people would think, you're like, the ownership's looking like, you're young, you're hired, like, you're teaching these guys some X's and O's. Like, where's all the stuff that we're going to do that's going to hurt teams? And they don't really understand, like, no, that's actually what's going to create a football team that's going to be really special. So it's really, honestly, one of the greatest moments of my life in my football career. Those 5 years with him was really special.
Yeah. I mean, I got to be a little fly on the wall with that relationship one night at the Soho House where
Good time. We also knew how to have a good time.
Yeah. So. We partook in a few tequila shots and I could definitely. It was always interesting to me because, like you said, you were 8 years older than him. And to see the relationship between head coach and veteran player, you in person, it was something very different than I ever seen. You know, it was a completely different way. And it's pretty cool to hear that kind of new wave coach.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what every team's trying to strike now. Every team is trying to strike to get the next McVay, the Shanahans, these guys that are these young guns, creative guys. But it's pretty cool to hear that, you know, yeah, they're brilliant with the X's and O's, but they're spending most of their time trying to develop the culture, trying to show guys what we are.
Yep.
And a lot of teams don't know what they are.
Yep.
And that's why most teams are dog shit in the National Football League. There's like 6-7 teams that are really vying for a Super Bowl every year.
Yeah. I mean, like in Sean, I mean, think about this 30-year-old head coach. You think you come in with like, oh, man, this team's really struggled the last 15. Yeah, they won Super Bowls in the early 2000s, but really 15 years, they haven't had a winning record. I mean, to come in and really have that mentality of, we didn't even have a single rule. He had one rule. He had it on the board in big words. We, not me. It's the only rule of the whole team. Wear whatever you want. Do whatever you want. But if it ain't a we decision, then it's not us. And so that was it. And that was how we ran our room and developed our culture. And it was really special. And I'm glad that he had the year he had, because I think it's probably one of the most, you know, to me, impressive coaching seasons
100%.
He's had since he's been at the helm, you know, with one of the highest caps, you know, dead caps in the entire league, one of the youngest teams in the entire NFL to make the playoffs. I mean, what a season. And I can't wait, because they got a chance this offseason. All the draft picks. The most money they've had since he's been the head coach, the most draft picks they've had since he's been the head coach. It'll be interesting to see what they build.
It's been an awesome relationship, him, Les Snead, that whole operation. Yep. You know, mortgage the future. They mortgaged the goddamn future for that Super Bowl. You know, and people were thinking this year they were going to be a 5-win team, 4-win yep. team, and go out and make the playoffs. Games with Names is brought to you by my friends at Wynn Las Vegas and Encore Boston Harbor. Wynn Las Vegas and Encore Boston Harbor are the ultimate destinations for sports and entertainment fans. From the sports book to gaming, restaurants, live music, and more. Whether it's a casual weekend getaway or that special occasion, the sports book at Wynn Las Vegas or Encore Boston Harbor is the place to watch and wager. From straight bets to parlays, teasers, and any prop bet you can dream up. And if you're a golfer, oh, spend a day at the Wynn Las Vegas 18-hole championship golf course. Looking for an incredible steak with an unbeatable view? Try rare at Encore Boston Harbor. Remember, sign up for Wynn Rewards and redeem resort credit in Las Vegas and Boston. Enjoy it all in a luxury resort setting with 5-star accommodations and all the amenities you can dream up. I will see you in Boston or Las Vegas soon. Jackie, why don't you set up the stage and break down?
Should we revisit these Rams real quick?
Revisit the Rams.
All right, first we got to start off. This was Andrew's 16th season in the NFL.
16.
This was Cooper Kupp's big year, triple crown winner.
Triple crown,
first
stud.
Since Steve Smith in 05, back when he had Jake Delhomme slanging the rock to him. Jake Delhomme, another Louisiana guy. We got to shout him out, baby. Stafford's first season in LA. It was a banner year. Career high in TDs, career high in completion percentage. And OBJ joins the team week 10, baby.
OBJ.
What did that do to the locker room, Andrew?
You know what? It was awesome. I think that year really was one of the things to me that cemented like really how special Sean is, in the sense that you think of adding Von Miller, OBJ in that season, guys who were established vets who played other places. And when they got there, it was so cool to see how refreshed they were, to be like, whoa, like you just said, I've never seen anything like this. Like this whole setup, and y'all are all like having fun. Like what actually is going on? I remember OBJ being like, man, this is like, gave me a whole new fresh breath of like wanting to play football.
Yeah.
And it was really cool, because we had a little lull in that season where we didn't play well. We had 3-game losing streak. We had just gotten everybody, and we actually lost 3 games in a row when we'd gotten all these people on the team, with Vaughn on the team and OBJ on the team. And then we kind of found ourselves. It took a little bit to kind of get to know each other and like get a feel for the new locker room vibes. And we took off from there. You know, we lost one time in overtime to San Francisco from then on. And it led us to a Super Bowl. So it's something that it was a rare, rare team and a really special moment for myself. But like I said, I think Sean McVay's story is still not, you know, finished. It's going to be special to watch this guy keep going, because I've told him this multiple times. If he has the passion to coach for a long time, he'll be one of the best to ever do it. I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah, that's the one thing that worries me, though. When you're a juice guy, a guy like that,
yep.
Can you sustain that?
Yeah,
that's tough.
That's why I think, honestly, one of the most impressive things about Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Dude,
it's unbelievable. Incredible. Like, every time you think those guys are dead, that guy comes up with a way to get them to play. You're all of a sudden like, who in the world is this football team that we're playing? Because watching on tape, this is not how they played the last 3 weeks.
No.
And then he can get them to just play at a level that's out of this world. But that's the thing. I think it will be a struggle. Plus, I think in the new age that we live in, media and the opportunities everywhere, like these coaches, they didn't have all those things back in the 80s and 90s and 2000s. Like with Bill, there wasn't somebody beating his door every day for here's tons of money to go do whatever else, right? So I think it is unique now trying to be a head coach and do it for a really long time. There's a lot of other options, and I think that is different for this new young wave of coaches as well.
So many different avenues of keeping your itch for football nowadays with the media.
Yeah, as it keeps growing, I mean, this game is insane, and how it's growing is insane, and they have lots of opportunities to do a lot of ways to be a part of it.
Jackie, break down these Bengals.
These 2021 Bengals, 10-7, coming off a 4-11 season, Joe Burrow's second season in the league. We're in the Zach Taylor era. We talked about the Marv Lewis era earlier. This is the third year under Zach Taylor. Jamar Chase's rookie season. What a rookie season
Boyd
it was.
Higgins.
Oh, my God. Higgins, I mean, they had the guys.
Well, you got to remember, too, Zach Taylor was with us in the Super Bowl we lost to you guys.
Yeah.
So he actually got that job.
That's right.
During the, he interviewed for that job during the bye week of going into the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So he actually got that job during that time. So it was, like I said, it was a pretty crazy script to end it the way it all ended.
Can you say during one more time?
During.
Yeah.
Just from the South, man. Yeah.
It's endearing the way you say during.
That's right.
During.
And we got to give a shout out to AJ Green here. This is the first time the Bengals started a year without AJ Green since 2010.
Jesus.
Ooh. I mean, that guy Hubbard, was a mainstay.
AJ Green, baby.
AJ Green, mainstay, baby. And they won the AFC North for the first time since 2015.
I mean, this was an electric year. Just tells you one thing. Quarterback's everything.
Yeah, we
beat. Stafford was out of his mind. I mean, he was out of his mind this season, too. But in that year, he was different. You could tell that he was refreshed and felt believed in. And I mean, think about all those years he had in Detroit and just, felt like he's fighting for his life every week. And then to come to a place, I'm sure, where you meet Sean McVay and you realize, oh, man, you mean you're going to tell me, like, I kind of feel like I have the advantage when I walk into a game every week?
Yeah.
I think you saw that in him, and it was fun. And I hope he keeps going, man. I know he's been, he's had some injuries. Obviously, he got beat up pretty good, and what a tough sucker he is. But, man, I hope he keeps going because he's a special one, and I'd love to see him have a couple more years. Him and Sean together, they could do a lot of great things.
He's a freaking stud. Jackie, what's the game lead up to this thing?
Andrew mentioned this earlier. The Rams got hot, won 5-6 to finish the regular season. The Bengals, not so hot, 3-3 to finish it off. Both teams were the 4 seeds. As you remember, Joe Burrow went in and slayed Mahomes at Arrowhead, gave us the phrase Burrowhead.
Burrowhead.
Pretty good one. Pretty good one. Bengals' first Super Bowl appearance since 89, back in the Icky Woods days.
Who'd they lose to?
The Niners,
let's go,
baby.
Come on, Bobs.
That was actually my Super Bowl prediction this year, and unfortunately Joe Burrow got hurt. But I went Niners, Bengals. I wanted the rematch. I thought we were going to get the rematch.
Yeah.
And this was the Rams' second Super Bowl appearance in 3 years, as we mentioned earlier. So they had that bad taste in their mouth still.
So what do you remember of the game leading up to this thing? Were you guys nervous?
In L.A.?
You guys, did you have
the
like
weirdest
a template?
Week ever?
Did you have a template because you guys were there a couple years before?
You would think, but it ended up being a home game.
Yeah.
And then the league actually, which it's like one of those things for me. Hey, listen, it worked out perfect. I have no complaints. For the young guys, I feel bad that we're on that team that never been to a Super Bowl, because when we went to Atlanta and play you guys, you get the allness. So you're on the road, like we're in a hotel, we're busing to the media days, you see all the security.
You guys stayed at home.
We stayed in our facility. And practiced and stayed in our houses, like literally busted.
I didn't even think about that.
We literally went to the game like it was a home game. And like, hey, the night before, stayed in a hotel by the stadium and just rode over to the game. And so it was the weirdest week. They even allowed us to do our media at our facility. So we didn't even have a media day.
Oh, wow.
So it was a weird, weird week. It felt like a, late December game that you're just at home. And obviously in Cali, you have the great weather. So it didn't even feel like you're playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It was very strange. compared to going to Atlanta.
Almost it could be taken as an advantage, though, for a young guy because there was less distractions.
No, for sure. I mean, I hate it for them that they didn't experience, like, the allness of what a Super Bowl feels like, right? And that's what I remember the most. And then, you know, really of the game, I just remember it felt like every 5 seconds I turned around, we lost an offensive player. Like, wait, who's out? Yeah. You know, like, you're on the sideline. You know how it is. Like, wait, like, you're going to get in the huddle, and you're like, wait, where's our tight end? You're like, oh, wait, where's the receiver? It was just constant the entire game. We were losing guys.
Did you guys get to use your same locker room that game?
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah.
Everything was the same.
That isn't wild.
Yeah, it was wild.
Oh, my God. Should we bounce through this game real quick?
Bounce through, Bubba.
As Andrew mentioned earlier, I mean, OBJ balls out, scores first, gets the Rams up, then gets hurt right before halftime. Like, he's going for it. He was being Super Bowl MVP.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was balling.
Jeez. Stafford throws a pick late in the second quarter, right around then. Rams are up 13-10 at the half. Then, got to rewind a little bit. This was the Rock Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The Rock gets
opened
out.
It.
What was, like,
can you get off the field so we can kick the football off? I mean, what's going on right now? I'm right there like, hey, I'm trying to win a Super Bowl, Rock. I'm glad you're in the middle of the field, but can we kick it, please?
I wonder if he's going to do that for every single UFL game.
You got it.
He should. One of the wildest openings. We were rewatching that last night. It was insane.
Yeah.
Golly. So, as we mentioned, the halftime score, 13-10, Rams are leading. Then, at halftime, we got Snoop out there with Dr. Dre. Kick Pearson's on the field.
Could you imagine that?
Do you know what Bill and Nick would do in that situation?
They would have been cut.
Yeah, the punter would have kicked the rest of the game.
They're going for two people would be like,
why would you possibly do that? They don't care.
No, those guys.
He's gone.
No one would even think about doing that. Out of your right mind. I remember seeing this live. I'm sitting there like, is that Kick Pearson?
Now, I will say at halftime, it was one of the hardest parts because you know how long those are.
30.
To like try to listen to the coaches and you're like, dang, that's Eminem and Snoop out there. Like, it's like, you're kind of listening a little bit. Like, I don't know what Sean just said, but y'all fill me in a minute because that was a sick halftime show. I mean, give them that.
Legendary LA with those guys.
Oh my God. And then, so we come back for the second half. Bengals start out hot, 75-yard TD bomb, Burrow to Chase. This puts the Bengals up all second half until a minute 23 left when Stafford finds Kupp in the back of the end zone. A little bit of a punt fest there in the second half for a while. Take the lead. Von Miller, Aaron Donald, ball out relentless. Sack Joe Burrow 7 times.
Seven times.
Insane.
You're getting sacked all year, though. It was impressive for them to make the damn Super Bowl with how much he got hit.
Super Bowl record. Then Joe gets out there. They get out to midfield. We were looking at this one earlier. 4th and 1. They're throwing it. Bring the blitz. Take him down, that's it.
Eric Weddle, baby. Eric Weddle jumped in the window. Burrow worked to his left. Weddle jumps in the window, and then he tried to get back, and it was too late.
I love Aaron Donald, he's a great baby. Dude.
Man, what a special guy that was. People forget we added him to start the playoffs. He comes 2 years sitting out. He's in his big truck. You know, he calls me on the phone. I'm like, I miss a call from him. I call him back. I'm like, dude, what's going on? I'm coming to join the team, baby. Like, what? He's like, yeah. You know, they signed me. I'm coming up. Like, I was like, you've been working out? He's like, man, I run sometimes after I coach the kids. Like, so I've been running some striders. Joins the team, makes the run, plays all the snaps, you know, whatever, the whole entire playoffs. And a lot of people don't realize this, tears his pec completely.
And
at the beginning of the game, never comes out, plays the rest of the game, can't even use one of his arms. And you can see him tackling with one arm.
I remember that.
That's some Rodney Harrison stuff right there.
And the thing is, too, he wasn't some pop. Like, he shredded it so bad, he had surgery. It was an 8-month recovery.
Oh, my God.
He couldn't play golf. He couldn't do anything. He had basically, it was like hamburger meat. He had shredded his pec so bad. And they had to sew it back together. And he basically, for 8 months, couldn't do anything with his arm. And I don't think he would trade it for a second. But really, really special. And then that game, too, it's wild. Like, you think of what happened to him. Tyler Higbee, you know, gets hurt in the NFC Championship. He's out. The next tight end, he gets hurt. And then you have Bryson Hopkins, who hasn't played hardly a snap the whole season, who's now your starting tight end during this game.
Next man up.
You lose Odell. Benny Skronik, who's a special teamer, all of a sudden now he's starting. He's a starting receiver. So you're walking in the huddle, and you're like, whoa, what is going on right now? Can we just keep a couple guys healthy where we can go win this game? That drive, though, with Stafford and Kupp, man, unfreaking believable. That you found your guy. They meet every morning at 5 a.m. on Wednesdays, and it came to life right there. Breakfast. Talking about process over results, baby.
Now, how was Matt right before that drive? What was his temper like?
First thing I'm gonna do, not that you're scared of Matthew. he's real sensitive about Matt. So
really?
Can we call him Matthew?
We've thrown a couple.
He's like
times.
McConaughey. McConaughey is the Matthew? Same way I hear.
I'm very serious about Matthew. Kelly's gonna post on Insta about you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm just telling you.
I like to come
Kelly's
over
gonna both. Get you on Insta if you don't. You gotta call him Matthew.
I'm sorry, right? Matthew.
Okay, Matthew.
I'm not.
It's very serious. But
still,
dude,
protecting.
Honestly,
how was Maddie before that thing?
Hey, yeah, if you're like me, I'm calling Matt the rest of the day. No. Anyway, so no, you know what's wild is like when people talk about the game, right? Like that's the things I actually remember. It's like him walking in the huddle. So, you know, if people don't realize this, the quarterback's always on the side of the team. Like, so, you know, he's communicating with the coach, all those things. So obviously our sideline is away from me being the left tackle. And so Matthew's over on that side. And so we're looking dead into each other. Every time he's getting the call from Sean, I can kind of see Sean in the background making the calls. And I see Matthew like looking up at us, and I never heard him getting in the huddle. And he was like, "Hey man, let's go do something special right here." You know? And there was just a look in his eye. Like I always said this, like Matthew to me is like John Wayne. Like he just does, like he's like this cowboy bad dude in the sense of he's not a cowboy type guy, but he's just a tough, never hurt, never says a word. Like it's hit, you can literally like, ugh, like nothing. Won't say a word, like not blaming anybody, never tell you a thing. Like they're draining his knee, his hip, whatever pregame. Like he doesn't care. Like the dude's just tough. And that's who he is. And so you're just like in the huddle, it's like, let's go do something special, boys. You know, it's like, yes, sir. You know, like nobody's touching you. Think of a Necessary Roughness, if you will, the movie. Like nobody's going to touch you. You know, like that's literally how you felt with Matthew Stafford in the huddle. And, the, you know, that drive, obviously him and Cup, really special. And every play, you know, it's like that, you know, I look on the screen, it's like, how, he's like, man, it's 15 play drive. Gosh, it felt like 4 months. You know, it literally like every, you're like, oh, we found a first down. Oh, we found a first down. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. So it was a wild, wild deal, but I think really special. You know, you always think those things end the way they end. To have those two guys, the relationship they formed, the bond and commitment they made to meet every single morning. We also that season had what we called the Breakfast Club. Me, Stafford, and Cup and our wives would meet every single Tuesday morning for breakfast that whole entire season at Soho in Malibu. We met every week. They'd have it like they were all ready for us every Tuesday morning. And it really became a great bonding experience for us. And we even did it the week of the Super Bowl. And the roughest one was the Tuesday after the Super Bowl when we haven't, none of us have slept at all. But it was like, hey, let's have one more. And we met that morning and it was like, dude, what a journey this whole year. We won a Super Bowl. Now here we are sitting here having breakfast again. It was a special year.
You know what? And that last drive pretty much summed up that team. 15 plays, you know, executing and gotta have it situations, key third downs, your go-to players making go-to plays.
One of the best no looks ever. If not the,
he invented it.
You know, Patrick said this, like I know a lot of people, but like Mahomes has actually said, like I grew up watching Stafford, like throw the, like he is the, like, I know nobody like talks about that much, but like he is the guy who like was doing
it.
That for a long time.
Well, Joe used to do it a little bit.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The flat. Little flat, but you know
he kind of took it a little crazy a couple times.
Because he
year.
Would go across the damn middle. Oh, no one does a no look across the middle. It's kind of like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
It was
and
wild.
It would be dialed right there. But to get back, you know, you guys got banged up, no sniveling, and that's what a heart of a champion really is. You know, next man up. You're not going to sit and worry about things you can't control. And there was no better way to probably win a Super Bowl than having your offense on the field, going out, having a long methodical drive. And, you know, I remember watching that. I was so happy for you just because, you know, we had, you know, a little relationship. And I was so happy for Matthew. I won't call him Matt. Just because of the career he had and the amount of losing he's been to. And then to all of a sudden, 1 year come out, win it with the Rams. It was just a spectacular thing to watch. It was a great story. And like we were just talking, I mean, even right now, like it's still, the story's still going for him and Cup. So any after parties? How was any good stories for the after parties? Who performed at your after party
You know, we actually, you know, I'm too old for all that, you know, so I wanted to do my own deal. So we actually, me, Stafford and Cup and a couple others kind of went together and did stuff with, H Wood kind of set up a deal for us at, Harriet's in West Hollywood and our families and stuff. So we had a deal there. You know, a no sleeper, obviously. I think some people ended up at like Drake's house somewhere. I don't know. I ended up agreeing at some point in the night, way too excited to do Good Morning America and like Today's Show and a bunch of stuff. So I literally had like trucks sitting at my house when I got like 5 a.m. in the morning, got there. They're waiting on me. I got in there, did that. I'm getting like going to go back in the house. Like, I think I'm going to sleep. And then I get a call and it's like, hey, Ellen wants you on today. And I was like, let's do it. Like, all right, well, it's 8 a.m. I'm, you know, hammered. If I go to sleep right now, I don't think I'm making it to Ellen at noon. So let's just keep rolling. So we just kept it rolling. And I went to Ellen and somehow I didn't get myself completely canceled or ruined from going on there with no sleep and still, you know, pretty intoxicated. So then after that, I passed out. You know, we had Breakfast Club Tuesday, the parade that afternoon. And then, you know what? What's wild, we actually came right here to the Wynn. We spent way too long. We got a little excited, you know, a bunch of parents,
yeah.
Coop and Anna and Kelly and Matthew and myself and my wife, Melissa, decided to take up the Wynn on an offer to come have an epic week. And so we spent five days here. 5 days. I didn't come back to Vegas.
I think that's the most impressive thing I've heard about this whole goddamn Super Bowl. 5 days in Vegas.
I didn't
come
back to Vegas for like a year because I was like, I don't ever want to see anything in Vegas for a long time. So it was 5 days. It ended with going to a Chainsmokers concert at like 2 a.m. at XS.
Standard.
Oh, man. And I think it was one of those flights home where the six of us, I don't think anybody said a word to each other. Like, it was no talk going home. Everyone got in their car, like, no bye hardly at all. Like, you know, just we'll see you when we see you. Like,
we'll never talk about this again.
Oh, gosh. We were.
See you at the next Breakfast Club.
We were done. We ate too much, drank too much, and slept zero. So it was a wild week, that's for sure.
Man, that's got to be awesome. I mean, your hometown, home team town, get the dub, go to Vegas. Final score was 23-20, Rams on top.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Name of the game. What's the name of this game, Whit? We got to name this game. Wow. This one's for Whit.
This one's for Whit.
The Rams house game. We not me game.
I think the We Not Me game.
We
I
Not
like
Me
that.
Game.
Let's do it.
All right, let's score the game presented by Wynn. Is this the greatest game of all time? Let's score it. Stakes 1 to 10, decimals okay.
Here's what I'm going to probably say. I'm going to go 7.7.
7.7.
Fair. I like that.
This is a man of integrity.
Pro score.
Remember?
Pro score.
Pro score.
Pro
yeah.
score. Star power.
Oh, well,
teams,
there was a lot of
crowd,
stars there. I'm going to go.
L.A.
Honestly, with the halftime show and everything, I'm going to put 10 star power.
This
Let's
was a
be
big,
honest.
Big one. Big
I
one.
I mean, bunch of Hall of Famers on that damn field, too.
Yep.
Gameplay.
Oof. You know, I thought kind of second half was a little of a bore for a while there. So I think if I had to do a gameplay on this one.
It's also the penalty at the end kind of like takes a little of the shine off.
Yeah. Or the penalty to start the half. But, you know, we can have that conversation if you want. Anyways, Teagans pulled Jalen Ramsey down by a space mask.
100%.
Anyway, so.
100%.
Say, let's go penalty for penalty.
Penalty
if we want to do that.
That's right.
Let's
make up call. Make up call. Make up call.
I'm going to go 7.7 again.
7.7.
Yeah.
This is a Gronk. This is going to be a Gronk style score.
I wonder why we're going 7.7. Yeah, baby.
Catching up.
The name of the game.
Ooh. You know.
We, not me game.
Well, I think because it was the slogan that Sean McVay started when he took over the regime and lived it through, because you had a lot of guys have to play in the game with everybody being injured. It wasn't one of these games where you had all the stars healthy going toe-to-toe. And the Bengals really had kind of a bad finish and just got on fire. You had to stop that momentum. I call a We Not Me game a 9.
9.
Love it.
We Not Me game. The back end Bengals. That's what I always call them. They always start off slow and end up back end of the.
Turn that thing on.
8.6. Where does it go? Where does it rank in the games that we've done, Kyler?
This is right between the 2010 AFC divisional round game, the can't wait game, and the Bush game Reggie.
Bush.
Went crazy. No, different. Different
oh,
one.
Oh, Bush game. Oh,
where
this
he
is
ran
Fresno
for
State.
513 yards against Fresno.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Right
this
between
is
those two.
Heisman game.
Yeah. So.
Did you catch on any of the method of my numbering?
No.
I knew the 7.7.
Look behind you.
Can you?
I got the 7.7.
Okay. Can you explain
Can
it?
Can you explain the other
Andrew?
Two?
There are two nines? Hold on.
Hold on.
Can I call you Andy?
Hold on.
There's some real numerology here.
Andy.
Yeah, that's worse than Matt.
10 and 9.
I don't know who 10 and 9 are. Anyways. Who's 10 and 9? Do you know?
Oh, Matthew Stafford. Cooper Stafford.
Come on, guys. It's not hard.
It's a Vegas.
The trifecta, baby.
The win trip.
If you were at Rob
it's
Gronkowski's
win
level.
It's the win-bet trip. You I mean, I know what branding is. It's the win-bet trip. The win brought
Hell
us
yeah,
here.
Baby.
Cooper, Matthew, and Big Whip.
Now,
baby.
If you were on Rob Gronkowski's level, you'd be able to do this math in your head.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is Gronk a big math
guy? Oh, my God.
Dude.
He's a math magician.
Like John Nash.
He really
I like
is.
That. I like to know that about him.
Gronk's
awesome.
A big numbers guy.
Okay. All right.
Andrew, you want to add anything to this? Anything
no,
to
man,
miss?
I appreciate the opportunity, brother.
Dude, you got
keep
you
killing
to,
it.
You want to plug anything?
I'm not a plugger. Yeah, not really.
You're not a plugger.
Not a soaker, a plugger, anything. I just hang out, man.
It's good to
I'm
know. It's good to know. Hey, man, I appreciate you coming. I've enjoyed our friendship over the years. Even though we see each other rarely.
Yeah.
But the times that we've seen each other.
It's always good, brother.
It's always been great. I'm super big fan of what you've been doing, you know, on Amazon. And
you as well, man.
Keep trucking, bro.
Let's go, baby.
O-line perspective.
The road team and the home team.
Road
Come on, baby.
Team and the home team.
Well, that was a good episode.
Oh, my God. Wait, what a guy.
He's a leader.
Leader.
He was even protecting Matthew after, like, been retired for years. Yeah, it's Matthew. It's Matthew.
It's Matthew.
Yeah.
We eat breakfast every Tuesday at 7 a.m.
Soho House.
I didn't know
house.
The wives were.
Yeah, I didn't know the wives were part of it.
So L.A., though.
It is. It's very
That's,
L.A.
Like, going from Cincinnati, having breakfast time at Skyline Chili, to freaking having breakfast time with your wives at Soho Malibu. Like,
you think it was what? Malibu? Or you think it was?
He said West, it.
He
said
Malibu.
Malibu.
He said
also,
Malibu.
I'm also gonna, since he's not here and he can't beat me up, Mister. I'm from Louisiana. Down in the bio, only drinks Perrier now. Remember he's telling us
well,
that only.
Only he said only.
He said no, he only drinks sparkling
he
water.
He said
now.
It's because he's from the bayou and all they drink is Coke. And he has such a Coke fix.
Okay.
He needs
that water with a little
spicy water.
That's linemen like that shit, man.
I know.
They gotta avoid calories.
Dude, his like deep cut on like being an offensive lineman and like oh,
that's why he's so
I
good. That's why
that.
He was great.
He was
that's
great.
Why he's a Hall of Famer.
Big guy, great guy. And he gave us some good Sean McVay nuggets. That was awesome.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool to see that, like, because he's 8 years older than everyone, they brought him in off of his experience. And, you know, he's a big part of the success of the L.A. Rams. Why the L.A. Rams are the L.A. Rams now.
Oh, for sure. Locker room guy, culture guy.
I mean, once they lost him on the O-line, you know, people were talking like, this ain't, yeah, he may be 40, but he runs shop there. And, you know, because of the knowledge he gave to a lot of the young players, you could see that it's translating with this newer team.
Seriously, and that longevity. I mean, he was playing at LSU when Saban was there.
Yeah.
And then he was just playing in a Super Bowl in 2022. Like, that's crazy.
Good, great on TV, too.
Great on TV, great. Man. He can do it all.
Dude, no one rocks a sweater underneath a jacket. Like a hoodie underneath a jacket. Yeah. Hoodie, he does.
Good bald head. Pulls off the bald head. I forgot
to bring that up. Let's go back to February 2022.
Number one movie, Uncharted.
Uncharted. Great video game.
Great video game. Movie, kind of forgettable. Unwatchable, as Skyler would say.
Wasn't it little...
Got him.
Is it Wahlberg?
Little Tom Holland. Little Wahlberg.
Tom Holland.
And Tom Holland.
The guy from Outer Banks, the other kid. Yeah, I don't know.
I like that. I liked it.
I don't even know if I saw it.
We also don't need to do too much of a deep cut. This was 2 years ago.
That's true.
If you don't remember this.
Back in that day.
Take some ginseng.
Back in my day. No, this was
we don't talk about Bruno.
I remember that like it was 2 years ago.
We used to listen to this in the car rides.
This was a Lily favorite.
We don't talk about Bruno. We don't talk about Bruno. No. You know that song?
Big movie. Not even a kids movie guy, and I know it. Yeah.
Around this time, Apple became a $1 trillion company.
Three trillion.
Three.
Insane.
I thought they had like $1 trillion in cash.
Something like that. I don't know.
Jeez.
Can't wait to wear my goggles around.
Oh my God, yeah.
Life.
Never have to leave your house again.
You know what? My phone's been going a little slower. Is we getting a new one here soon or what?
I saw Diplo met Tim Cook, and he was wearing the goggles.
Oh my God!
Dude, he's so cool. Diplo's a beast.
Gosh, he's so funny.
This was also the slap heard around the world month, February 2022. Will Smith.
Oh snap!
Part of me feels like that was a long time ago. Part of me feels like it wasn't.
That's crazy.
There was a bit of a COVID time.
Yeah.
I thought for sure that was like some Hollywood stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
I thought it was staged.
We witnessed the, yeah.
But I don't think it was.
I don't think it was.
No.
Yeah.
Yo.
He doesn't get tossed after that? You got to toss him.
He won an Oscar.
I know. And he gets up there and gets like,
I guess if it's your night, it's your night.
I guess so. I'm Team Chris in this one always.
Gotta
love Chris Rock. Yeah. Peace.
Come on, man. You can't do that.
Come on.
I love Will too. That seemed like some.
Dude, party
It's
back.
A classic example of your personal life affecting your work life.
Thanks, Krabby Tyler. Wordle, that was introduced to the world.
I was never a Wordle guy.
I played a few times, just not smart enough for it.
I was more of a Words with Friends with a B. I like the spelling B on New York Times.
Queen Elizabeth II celebrates her 70th year in Britain.
Talk about longevity.
Serving as the monarch.
And now she's dead.
R.I.P.
I love that show.
What? The Monarchy?
The Crown.
The Crown.
That's how I learned about all that stuff. I had no clue.
Did I feel like Angie would have a Princess Di beanie baby.
Oh, my mom has. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and they're like every, stowed away.
Yeah. Every, yeah. I don't know. My mom's age, if you're a woman of that age, you love Princess Di. I didn't know why. And then you go and you watch the show, and I don't know where the show, who's making what, make look what, but that's what I think. That's what I think of with, like, everything. I learned about how the monarch works. I learned about, like, Britain's basically owned everything, and then everyone started independent or, like, leaving stuff.
Just like that, yeah.
Like that in her lifetime.
Crazy.
Yeah.
She took over, and, like, her dad died at 35 or something.
This was, and, like, what?
And she wasn't supposed to be a queen. Her brother was supposed to be the king, but he did something that he
wanted to marry an American.
He did something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then he became king, ends up dying. She becomes queen at 17. And like, that's when all like everything from everyone started breaking away from the Brit. I don't know. It's a good show. You guys should watch.
I just read something or saw a TikTok or anything recently that King Charles now, he doesn't like buy in completely to modern medicine. And so he has like a potionist. He's got like someone making him potions and shit.
This is the king of England.
Jeez.
Fact check me on that later, Jack. All right. Sports world.
Sports world. National champions, Georgia.
The Dogs.
Heisman Trophy winner, Bryce Young.
I wonder how he's going to pan out.
He needs to have a team around him. That's tough. His strength's not like running around and looking like a phenom athlete. His strength is like distributing, reading defense, you know. He's a point guard. That's going to take a while and a good coach around him. Super Bowl LA Rams were the champions. We went over the game. NFL MVP, Aaron Rodgers. That was only 2 years ago, MVP.
Was this the first of the back-to-back?
Crazy.
Yeah, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then Brady retires for the first time.
Huh?
Remember Brady, like, false started his retirement?
Yeah. Then he came back.
I get confused four days later. Because of I get confused.
It was like a Schefter tweet.
Schefter.
Yeah.
Shooting from the hip.
Just letting it spray, baby.
Messi in Argentina wins the World Cup over Mbappe in France. That was awesome. That game was insane. Cool. That's a classic games with names.
That's a game. That is a game.
I would love to do a full games with names with Messi in Spanish.
I sneaky thinks he speaks English. He doesn't do it publicly.
I'll get Duolingo, baby. I'll download Rosetta Stone.
Dude, I'm full MLS since Messi's been.
So maybe like we'll cut in between things where, because my Spanish is más o menos. But like,
así.
Yo, wait up. Yo, how do you say, como se dice, that was a fucking sick ass goal. And he
goes, best episode yet. Oh my God, that would rock.
That'd be tight. National League fully adopts the DH. Hate it.
Baseball can't do anything right these days.
Hate it.
The shot clock, I think, did something.
Shout out to
Theo for that one. You're watching on TV, but if you go to a game, you always want the game to be as long as possible. Like when I was a kid, we go to a Giants game like on a school night. I was praying for extra innings just in case my mom's it's like, you guys were up so late, you know. That was what I was hoping for.
It's free baseball, Mom.
What's the legacy for this game? McVay?
We got
this
the big questions start. To answer. Yeah, what does this do for McVay's career and kind of putting him on that short list of best active coaches? What do you think?
100%. I mean, he's like that new generation. He's like the start of the young gun coach that everyone looked for. Everyone's looking for the next McVay.
It was interesting hearing Whitworth talking about McVay because it seems like he had a lot of parallels with what you've said about Belichick in terms of like attention to detail, focusing this. But it seems like he's got a more modern approach with how he handles like the players and like the personnel and how that stuff. It's just interesting to see what kind of works and doesn't work.
Yeah, there's multiple ways to the top, Kyler.
No, I think it's curious.
Modern way?
No, I'm not. Don't you come at me. I'm the biggest Bill guy there is.
All right, dude.
I think they fucked up getting rid of Bill.
West Mass, you hear that right now?
It is funny, a guy that's 38 years old and you're already talking about the McVay coaching tree. You know what I mean? That's how you know you're doing something right.
That's when you know you're doing something right.
When you're 38 and you're already
and he's Mac Daddy. Tree talk.
You played against them.
We played against them.
When we get him on, we've been talking to him. We'll see.
We got
to
get his dad on. His dad's an Ohio. They're Ohio people. You know what I mean? Football coach. When I went to the practice to do that Cooper Kupp interview.
Oh, that's right.
And you know he's a football coach because he gets straight up in your face. And like he's like right in your face telling you a story. Literally like we're about to make out.
Close talker.
Like, you remember that? I was at that game. I'm like, yeah. Like, you could just tell. And then he'd walk away and go do something. Then he'd come right back over and get in my face. I'm like, that's in the blood.
I love it.
The coaching's in the blood.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. McVay's or NFL royalty.
Let's see what some other legacy questions that came out of this one. Stafford, where does this kind of, what does this do for the Stafford legacy?
I mean, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. If he doesn't win this, still think Hall of Fame? I mean, you know the yards and everything in Detroit were sick, but he didn't have a playoff win until this season.
So who else is in that class? Who else is in his years? See, that's what you got to think of.
Yeah. Stafford's class is weird.
Because he overlaps a couple.
Yeah, he's kind of like a Gen X person where he's kind of like in the middle.
So he was 09 draft.
We were the same year.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
So
Sanchez was in that draft.
Yeah.
I mean, he with the Super Bowl, 100%, first ballot.
Okay.
I mean, he's a tough football player too, man.
And Rivers is probably going to get in without a win.
Like, I'm taking Matty Stafford over Phil.
Yeah.
Same.
Over Breeze?
Yeah, I mean, I probably would.
They're definitely...
There's
a conversation there. Yeah.
I do kind of lump them together in my head as sort of like in the same orbit of guy, I guess. I'm trying to think who else I would put in there.
The only difference with Breeze versus Stafford is Breeze was able to like resurrect the Saints a little bit, and Stafford, whether it's his thing or not, up for debate, but Stafford was never able to resurrect the Lions, had to leave and get success elsewhere. So if there's any
Sean Payton versus the 15 coaches Matthew Stafford had.
Drew Brees never had Calvin Johnson.
Matthew Stafford was competing against Drew Brees and with just Calvin Johnson.
I'm just saying.
And he had a couple other players, but like he used to get beat up.
Yeah.
He did. I don't know. I mean, that's a great argument.
Good, yeah. They're very similar. I can see both ways on that.
Will Joe Burrow win a Super Bowl in Cincinnati?
That's a tough one.
I don't, you know what?
They do have the Chiefs slaying gene. If anyone at the AFC has that, it's the Bengals.
They went into
But he's been hurt a bunch.
A lot in the first couple years here. And can they keep that
receiving
core?
No one's talked about that. And we all talk about Lamar and, you know, my guy, Joey B, it's just he's gotten to a Super Bowl. Like he got to stay on the field, bro.
I know.
Because you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then what are they going to do? They're going to lose Boyd? Where they still have to address the offensive line. The defense is always really good with Hubbard Hendrickson and Lou Amarillo.
Yeah.
I saw him in Vegas.
He's a good old football guy.
He was cool as fuck.
He was cool.
Yeah, he was cool. We had a drink.
I love that.
Because we used to battle against each other when he was in Miami.
Oh, that's right. What's he drink, by the way? You a beer guy?
We were all having a little tequila.
Yeah, hey, all right. I like that.
A little Tommy T.
Oh, yeah, baby. Hell yes.
No, I
think Joey B gets one. I think he gets one.
Okay, so who? Let's talk about AFC right now.
Okay.
Lamar, Patrick Mahomes.
He's a good player.
I mean, if this was the year to get Patrick Mahomes, and I know they had a great defense, but like if you had a shootout, you could win second down and have a blitz package against the Chiefs. I mean, this was your year. Okay. Yeah. So, Lamar, you got a pissed off Josh Allen. This guy's been humiliated. He's watching all this stuff right now. You don't think Josh Allen's pissed off at home? Who he's getting into that 8-9 year where it's starting to come, and you know what I mean? And what about John Harbaugh and Justin Herbert? What about that?
Could be a nice little duo.
So it's just it's getting harder and harder.
No, I know. And talent's just rising and rising. And you got CJ Stroud coming on.
CJ Stroud.
You got a new young buck coming on.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Trevor Lawrence needs to get it. We gotta do something down there. That was a bad miss.
Yeah. Now that you think about it this year.
And I know it's the teams, but it's a quarterback. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know.
It was always spurts with. And then all of a sudden, you're like, what the hell are we doing? Why are the Jacksonville, what are we doing here?
After they had that comeback against the Chargers in the playoffs last year, it was like, oh, the Peterson thing has resurrected him. It's sexy. And then this year,
hurt.
It was like,
they were banged up a lot. You know, you got to learn. That's another thing. That's why it's, look at why the Kansas City Chiefs, how come they got to figure it out? They know.
Consistency.
They're the kings.
What do you think about this, being able to reflect on this with 2 years, the Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford trade?
Probably the best trade for both teams in the history of the league.
Seriously. It really did work out.
Jared Goff, he's about to get another huge deal. Now, how much he wants to take will dictate on how good his success will be. And Matt Stafford, I mean, he got a bowl, and he looked like he just got resurgent this year.
Mm-hmm.
He looks insane. He is tough. They're only going to get better. They found Puka. You're going to get Coop healthier next year. They're going to get a couple. Their offensive line played damn well. They're only going to get better playing together. Adding Williams, Kyron Williams, defense, young gun. Just, I wonder what they're going to do with Aaron Donald. But the guy next to him, he was a second team All-Pro. You know what I mean? So, that's what – but you see if Aaron Donald retires or he doesn't play, you're going to start to see why that guy was second team all pro potentially. And I'm not taking anything away from him, but when you get to play next to, you know, generational talent, like you get, it makes you better because you're getting the favorable matchup most of the time.
Are we talking Jonah Williams here?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I, because that looked like one of those deals where it's like, oh, you feel so bad for Goff. He got shipped out to Detroit. He's going to go there and die. Like, it's going to suck. And then now they're the most fun team.
I'm so happy for the city of Detroit that they were able to beat the Rams, because that would have been catastrophic for that city.
That would and then we did have the matchup. Like, I forgot about the big matchup.
I was like watching the game. It was like, if the Rams like lose this game, it's like whatever.
MCDC got to tighten it up, man. I love the aggressiveness, but we got to settle down, dude.
Take the damn points.
You're Parcells guy, right? Or Peyton. Sean Peyton. Okay. Sean Peyton guy.
Yeah.
Let's take some points, man.
Amen, brother.
Come on, man.
Okay, so to wrap up this game, it's the we, not me game.
We, not me game.
Sean McVay's saying.
Score 8.6.
It should be the Breakfast Club game.
Breakfast Club game. Don't you forget about me.
John Hughes Bowl.
Is that what they do now when they leave the parking lot of Soho? Soho, Malibu.
Oh, my
with
God.
With retires.
It should.
Yeah.
The fist bump. What an all-time fist bump. Oh, and then we got to talk about the numerology he did here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he threw us off.
Hey, no, that's
I was
witty.
Slow on the – that was big time.
That's hard on my radar.
I was as the czar of the numbers here, what do you think about that? You
know, I mean, I like that the score wasn't that high. I think it's still higher than it should be, but, like, I like his team, his camaraderie.
I think he
could have
gone better. I think because he went 277s. He could have threw like a random number in there that
gameplay
made
was
the outcome come to something better.
Right, because he did like his double,
specific,
his number. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to 86 him.
That's diner talk, baby. 86 that.
86
that
score.
86 that number.
Gameplay, it did kind of end on somewhat of a controversial call. There was another, like, if the biggest moments of the game are, like, two controversial calls, like, that kind of takes away from, like, the sanctity of the gameplay. The name, I never heard We Not Me. It sounds nice. It rhymes. But, like, culturally, it's not really there.
Right, right. It's not
star power, fine.
This is a Breakfast Club score.
Yeah, it's a Breakfast Club score. Come on now. Molly Ringwald score.
All right, well, that's that episode. Let's do the...
Let's hit the old hotline to see what's on your mind. Again, that number is 424-291-2290.
Julian, don't Belichick. Just get off the stupid damn podcast. We're getting the fucking team back together. I already called Tom. He's going to be here tomorrow. Get your fucking ass to practice tomorrow. Get Gronk. Come with him. We're going to get this fucking shit going. I'm not going anywhere else. We're starting a new fucking team. We only need fucking 11 guys. Get the fucking practice tomorrow. I don't want no bullshit. See you later.
Put your fucking shit on. I'm telling you, it's going to be raining. Get out. See you on the grass. That's pretty good. Pretty good,
pretty
Bubs.
Good. I like that he's starting
a new team. People should start sending in their Belichick impersonations, and then I'll just give a ranking on it.
I like that.
That's a whole new podcast. That's a whole new set. That's a spinoff.
And then I can't wait for the first time that I see Bill in person. He's probably going to motherfuck me over it. Look, Jules, like, what the fuck? Will you just shut the fuck up about my whole voice?
Hey, maybe that's in the Fox Green Room next year.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Maybe get Frank Caliendo in there, too.
Yo, guys, it's your boy Dallin from PA. Quick question. Who looks better in a pair of jorts, Gronk or Jules, and why is it actually Jackie? Thanks.
Oh.
Hey, me, I know that much, brother. The legs are a point of emphasis this offseason in the weight room. So it ain't me, but I will say the amount of comments we would get last season when we were back in New York on the jorts, the people love the jorts. You rock them, brother.
You know where I got the jorts from?
Frank?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Well, no, those two were definitely
Jessica
jort
Simpson
people.
And Dukes of Hazzard.
You guys remember Flipper?
Yeah.
The old one from like Nick at Night?
Yeah.
Little kid used to have jorts.
Oh, my God.
I thought that was tight.
I would not have guessed that as where you got him from. I
forgot his name, but
oh my
I used
gosh.
To like that show. Okay, I lived in Hawaii, had jorts. It was a fucking pet dolphin.
Like the one from the Burt Reynolds, like from the 60s, that one?
No, it's like a TV show, Flipper.
Oh, the New Adventures of Flipper. I think I was looking at Flipper. It looks like Flipper was revised in 95 as the new adventure.
No, it's way older than that.
Like, all right.
It's from like the 60s.
63, yeah,
that's what
yeah,
I'm saying.
Yeah,
when I said the 60s earlier.
It was Burt Reynolds?
He was in like some of them, I think.
Oh.
Brian Kelly, Lou Kelly.
The kid. It was the kid.
Yeah, Bud Ricks, a.k.a. Tommy Norton, also known as Tommy Norton. Yeah, he was kid. Yeah, all right. Yeah, he was a jorts rocker.
I feel like jorts is not the best attire if you're going to be by the ocean a lot.
I know. That's...
Yeah, you need more of a baggy or something.
A wicking
yeah.
material.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's got them things on. Tommy. Shout out Tommy Norton, bro.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's a good question.
Gronk, I bet Gronk can pull some off, though.
Oh, yeah. His VMOs look tight as hell.
Hell yes.
What up, Jules? I'm a high school kid from Foxborough. And my football team just won the state championship.
Let's go.
I was wondering if you heard about that. What do you think?
Foxborough High won state 80 at the Turkey Bowl. Because I think they played the state championships in Gillette.
Yeah.
Let's fucking go, Foxborough High. Hell yeah. We were referenced to you guys so many times when we had a bad football play.
I was just going to say, a lot of those kids could beat you guys.
According to Coach Belladonna. Hey, kids at fucking Foxborough High could do. So technically, Coach, we really could. They're state champions.
But hey, Massachusetts state championships are bullshit.
Why?
There's like 25 of them. They've got more state champions than Texas. Massachusetts.
Why don't you just crap in their cornflakes?
No, that's good for them. No.
Kids just won state.
As someone who lost the Division 3B Super Bowl Central Mass versus Western Mass.
There it is, guys. Hey, he hates you because he ain't you. He hates you because he ain't you, Foxborough High.
Playing in their own backyard, the second-ranked Foxborough High team clinched the MIAA Division 5 Super Bowl 48-21 over our top-ranked Hanover High.
Hey, Kyler, did they win the last game they could have played in?
They sure as did. Congrats, Foxborough High.
Oh, shit. Hey, we're sending you guys a...
We got no information on them. Text us.
Send you some merch, dog.
Hell yeah.
Hey, Jules. My name is Megan. I am 22, and I go to your alma mater, Kent State University. I wanted to call in and ask that you bring on someone of the likes of Nick Saban or someone who was on the Kent State Championship team and talk about that big football win. Before Saban, of course, went to professional league to coach. Also wanted to say I've been trying to DM you on Instagram because I would love it if you could come to my graduation from Kent State, of course, this spring 2024. It's on May 10th, by the way. But anyway, I think it'd be really dope if you talked about that game. I hope to see you do this and hope to see you at my graduation, maybe. Haha, yeah, okay. Bye.
Right on, Megan.
It took Jules 10 years to go to his own graduation.
Yeah. We definitely got to, Megan, we got to get Saban on.
Oh, that would rock.
He's doing TV with ESPN now.
I know.
He's called College Game Day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. He's got to get on here, man. He goes on McAfee all the time. Come on here. Come see us.
Kent State alum, baby.
We'll settle for Antonio Gates. I don't care.
He's our number one booster.
Is he really?
Or he's something like that. He donates the most to our football program.
Hell yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
Him and Miss Terry, baby. Love him.
I would love to have a conversation with Nick.
Have you guys ever met?
We've met, I think, in passing.
Okay.
But yeah, man, I love Coach Saban. I was a Tide fan because of Coach Saban a little bit.
Same. I think we all kind of just want to witness greatness and keep rooting him on.
What game do you think?
I just like him because he went to Kent State.
Did he play at Kent State or he like?
Yeah, he played. She's talking about 1972. I think it was 72 is the last time we won.
Is that when Jack Lambert was there?
Yeah. He played with, or I think Coach may have played with them.
Because Lambert was drafted, what, 74?
Saban was there from 70 to 72.
Just missed him.
Defensive back, baby. But then he was a GA at Kent State from 73 to 74. Yeah. 75, 76, linebackers coach. So, yeah, he got his playing career going there and coached began his coaching career there.
Hell yeah.
What a fucking guy.
Golden
Flash. What about Antonio Gates? You guys definitely run into each other.
We've seen each other like an all-star or something.
I think I saw him at the Super Bowl. He was around.
Joe Walsh.
I'm just going down my list of great Kent State guys.
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton. People forget
Jim or
Drew Carey.
Drew Carey.
Really?
Drew Carey. I kept saying Carey. Drew,
he'd be an awesome guest. He's like a big Ohio time guy. Football fan. Yeah.
Cleveland rocks.
Cleveland rocks.
Dude. Oh, Steve Harvey too. Shout out
Steve Harvey.
Arsenio.
Lou Holtz.
Arsenio.
We're punching above our weight here at Kent State.
Hey, we.
Oh shit, David Sedaris.
Kent State, man. I'm telling you, we got some fucking people. When I went on my visit there, they go, yeah, we have the research team that developed the plasma TV.
Hell like, yeah.
3 weeks later, the LCD came out and ruined it.
Plasma was not the wave after that.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, James Harrison. Shout out James Harrison.
James Harrison.
Scary guy.
Yeah. Love James Harrison.
Dude, get him. Debo. Get him on. Do that. He had that like 99-yard interception return for a touchdown.
What about what's... Now I'm thinking graduation.
Oh, we got to get James Harrison on.
He's a legend, bro. He could
legend.
You guys he could lift this whole house.
You guys had a little layover, right? Or a little
yeah, we played together.
Yeah.
He's a beast. What is Kent, Ohio? What is Kent State like in the spring around graduation time?
Good well, vibes? May 4th, 1970 is when they had the shooting.
Not cool. Not cool.
The state troopers.
Farted in
Ohio. Yeah. But the crazy thing is, that was like, that weekend was like, a party weekend.
I was going to say, springtime
like
in college.
For man. It or something. It was like the biggest, craziest. There was Sherman Street. There was College Street, College Fest, Shermania.
Oh.
It was pretty crazy. But that was an awesome episode. Thank you again to Ole Whitworth. Spectacular to have him on. We got to do some shit with him.
Awesome.
I think he's out. He's around. A year? No.
I think he's still around here.
Regardless, if you need me for anything, I'm there, bubs. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Comment a game you want us to do. And remember to rate
and review.
To rate and review. Remember to follow Games with Names on YouTube, Instagram, X, TikTok, and Snapchat. Leave a message on the hotline bling at 424-291-2290. And we'll see you guys next week.
Later.
Also, thank you to Wynn Las Vegas for their hospitality.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for picking up my room service fees and stuff. We'll see you guys next week. Games with Names is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.